or are they both overlapped? Anyways, what did you want to know, Bert? What was the topic?
So that was a reference to the secret society at Yale. Then that's what the scrolling key was, in that.
Yeah, you didn't mention. Know what that was. That's all you asked.
No.
What is that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And they go back into the 19th century, so Payne would have been part of that in some way.
Okay. Hey, Bob, there was something interesting about the Chinese Communist Party, and the Chinese Communist Party knew about the aliens before the Pentagon.
No, that was all mixed up. I was saying the mountain and the Communist Party and lumping them all together. And when he says the Communist Party knew about the aliens, no, he means the mountain. The mountain's been the mountain's been around for 7,000 years.
Oh.
You'll hear me say that figure. And that's why I asked. I said, did I upset? Were they forced to come out and deal with the world because all the layers of the onion were being exposed in the electric environment? So he says, no, they're just here to finish it, which means working with me, with the big denouement, big climax.
Was it correct that I typed a note? Where is it? That the outer ring of the Pentagon was running interference to the Chinese Communist Party. Did I hear that right?
Okay. I take the Evergreen's statement that the aliens came to the Boudians or something, whatever they thought the aliens were, that generally was the Boudians, came to Chinese people in 95 and gave them some extra computer knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that put them ahead of everybody. And so American business found out about that. So all the companies went to China. And, you know, they say Biden has been a Chinese agent for 20 years. That was the effect. Everybody sucked up to China because they had the edge, just like they're sucking up to me now because of what we have. So the Chinese Communist Party took advantage of that, and they're now the meanest people on the planet, so to speak. But they're up against the mountain, which is the real power. And so the mountain is like the Ming Dynasty, and the Chinese Communist Party, who came in with Mao, are the Qin Dynasty. And Ayn says they're weaker, they're floopers, they're Federalists, they're Herbert W. Armstrong, just stuff like that. And there was a fact they said, which I just forgot, but they said some interesting. Well, I wonder if it will come back. They said an interesting point, one liner. So so it's all mixed up in that question period there.
Okay.
Oh, I remember. This part is deleted. I didn't play this part. But guess who's part of the fucking elite in the Skull and Bones? Or okay, there's two people. Do you realize a key person involved in the Kennedy assassination, Ian Hassan, is Ralph Nader?
Yeah, I heard that. I thought I heard that. I'm like, okay, Ralph Nader? I heard
that's counterintuitive. That's the word.
Yes.
Counterintuitive. Yeah, there's a whole section that he did on Ralph Nader 5 or 6 years ago. It was a bit much, and I never play that. Fuck, I'm not playing that. So he mentioned it again today. But the other thing, whatever elite and insiders that he was describing, you know, in the course of the session, and more modern people like Webb and them, guess who he named? David Icke.
What?
Oh. Yeah. you're still talking about JFK assassination here.
No, we're talking Whitney Webb, what happened to America in the 90s the 90s. And that's when he serviced. Now, look. What people say from Mae Brussel to Joseph Farrell to David Icke about who killed Kennedy, they're all fucking wrong compared to Ion. Now, I don't know if Ion's right, but Ion has a whole different view that none of them would accept. When I told Barbara Brussel that the Queen did it, she wouldn't believe it. So I can't believe that, Bob. That's too ridiculous. So nobody's going to believe Ion. But But I thought he did a good job naming names. We really never hadn't done this too much. He named names, and they went methodically back, 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 and they all fit. This whole wing that fits what the Cosmic Worms originally said. It was those that hate the racist, natural, whatever they are down there. You know, JW's one of them. They hate people. They hate the North. And they think that the blacks made a big mistake leaving the plantations and moved north. That was they got worse concentration camps up in the cities. And they had a relatively good scene in the plantations. So that southern gang that hates, led by Strom Thurmond, and when it got into the George Wallace thing, they remember, that's how Nixon won the 68 election. You know what he did?
What?
He offered the straight Democrats who weren't radicalized by their sons and daughters in college, the liberals who started thinking, oh, maybe we shouldn't go to the Vietnam War. Well, the hard hats in the North, which is the mafia, the construction people, and the South gathered around George Wallace with that Cedric Underhill, Underwood, whatever, organizing it. The Nixon won by hijacking what they call the moderate Democrats or the Southern Democrats. The Southern Democrats got alienated the way Mayor Daley and that Democratic convention in the summer of 68 that the Yippies destroyed by having the press get beat up by the cops. So that's the Northern Chicago Mafia. But the Southern didn't like how Daley handled the Democratic Convention. So they started their own party under Wallace, or if they didn't join Wallace, they didn't like Humphrey, they didn't like the Northern guy, so they voted for Nixon, and that's how he won. So So the Republican Party stole the tribal Southern people, and that's what built up the Republican Party, and for 50 years, the Democrat journalists and propagandists just talk about the Republican Party got worse and worse and worse, you know? Till finally, the ultimate sin, they went into Trump. So the literate Ron Rosenbaums, who grew up with Trump in New York, they don't like. So when Tucker Carlson gets on and says these liberals hate America, they hate the South, which is the battle that McLuhan says has been going on for 300 years. The literate North against the oral South. So that's a deep part of America. And it's the Southern people, because they weren't in charge of America in the 19th century, when the global Peter comes in, everybody flips into their opposite. The Chinese become Americans. Americans become Buddhists. Okay? So the South takes over industrial America and keeps it going. And the North becomes romantic Southern guys by hanging out with Hopi Indians. Okay? That's Stuart Brand and all those aliens that create the Whole Earth Catalog. That's a whole mythology that the Northern white people are duped of. So the North went South and the South went North. So the corrupt, since the industrial establishment was so out of touch with the electronic present, the hardware industrial world was left over for women and Southern assholes or tribal people. So they took over Washington and made it worse. They became more, you know, patriotic and supported every stupid war since Vietnam. It's all Southern shit. And the North, they all went gay.
Bob, you are the resident interval of history. You give all the links.
I give the complete facts, the comprehensive view with no, Bob doesn't care. And I'm not trying to defend any point of view here.
Yeah, you give all, fill in all the resident animals of history, man. Golly, that's what I thought after the end of this prophecy. I'm like, damn, Bob is the resident interval because, boy, he closed some links with the Kennedy assassination. Bob, one thing, just a link. It was interesting here that communism, because I think it was like maybe two or three office hours where you guys had some Marxist or communist lecturers and you played the tape.
Yeah, that's the famous Frederick Jameson who did a book on Wyndham Lewis, and he's at Duke University. He's a top leftist Marxist intellectual, very smart guy.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear that, and they were talking about the military, and I thought about it, and it made me remember when I was in the military that I remember a sergeant when I was first, you know, old buck private in there, and the sergeant said, "Son, the United States Army is the biggest form of communism in the world."
He said that to you personally?
Yeah. Well, he said that to someone that was around me that was acting up. He said, "The United States Army," he was Southern too, he said, "The United States Army is the biggest form of communism in the world thanks to the UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice, son, so you got to follow what I say." I never forget that.
Yeah, now this is where that speech is really important. It's a really clever speech by Jameson. So he said, "The military is a welfare institution.
Yes,
you've got health,
is.
Education, and everything in there for free. All you have to do is sign up and risk being killed, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have any wars and you don't get killed, you have everything for free. In other words, what the liberals want, free education, free medicine, free everything, is in the fucking military." So he said,
and free vaccines.
What?
And free vaccines.
And free vaccines.
Yeah, free vaccines.
Yeah, they're
that's right.
Military is the biggest guinea pig.
There always is a disservice here. But anyway,
he,
as a communist, a literate northern communist, says, what we do is, what do you say? We take the military and somehow make them powerful and turn America over to and make everybody, draft everybody. Everybody joins the military. And then they all get all the free shit. So I
they have that
brilliant.
Here in Switzerland. They do that in Switzerland. Everybody has to go to the military in Switzerland, all of them, over 18. And if they don't, they have to get some type of certification, and they do, what do you call it, civilian service, and that's really like janitors.
Stuff. And they're the one country that doesn't fucking fight.
Right.
You know, some scholars have tracked back the whole communist meme goes back to Switzerland in the 1200s, because they had those... They had an interesting democratic thing before anybody else. I forget what they were called. And so it's actually communalist. It was egalitarian there. And I don't know.
Isn't that the Calvinists?
No, Calvinists come later, unless that is true. I don't know, but I remember it was back in the 1300s before the Calvinists.
It may be.
But the Calvinists, they might have done something. Calvin then might have come from Switzerland. I don't know.
Switzerland, they provide the Swiss Guard, so the Catholic Church is in charge in Switzerland, mostly.
Yeah, and Ion says
no
our Swiss real Guard. Battle involves blah, blah, blah.
What did you say? Repeat.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you have to be paying attention to get that one. So this guy had a genius idea. He said, everybody joins the military, and you get all this welfare shit, and then you turn he says, wars are obsolete, territories are obsolete, so the military becomes, and the Evergreens predicted this, that they would just be around for disasters and help people. They'd be the thing that would help stuff, instantly organize, right?
Yep.
Rebuild stuff. So he said the key to us, peacenicks, is we got to not resist evil. We must join evil, the military, and manipulate, jujitsu it into a utopia in America.
Yeah.
On slight different tangent there, you said, hackled Ion to get the KGB Godfather in Pentagon the name. And
yes, I want some KGB names.
He said, yes, but Orgod, which is very Danish or very Norwegian, and I can't even find the name.
No, yeah, there is a Jesper. I looked it up, and he is Norwegian, that's right. But fucking Norway, they fucking started communism. They're the ones of turning taxes, use the Finland station to fucking pump Lenin into Russia. 1917 or whenever it was done.
Well, Finland and Norway.
They're fucking communists. They're fucking communists. And this guy, he's probably a smuggled, you know, KGB guy several layers removed. So the Outer Rings thing. So back to the Pentagon. So you have the Pentagon aliens. Nobody seems to get to them, we found out in this session. There's an outer ring of aliens or outer ring of PR guys who protect the inner ring. And the outer ring, they went to the Chinese and did the Evergreen scenario of doing something with the Chinese and got them a little more advanced. But it was done by the outer ring who didn't tell them the whole story. So the most secret information, that's probably why I'm classified as A3. You'd have to be A3 to even talk about me. Because when you talk about me, you get into the inner aliens. And that's the deepest secret among the secrets, right? So some people only know the outer ring version of the aliens.
Yeah.
So that was another thing that came up, the division of the Pentagon. Fifth ring versus the inner ring. So as usual, I go in there, knowing nothing, just start talking ion and I excavate something new every fucking session. And basically, what we're learning more and more, all this stuff for the last 5-10 years, is how in charge I am. That's the fucking punchline. He talks about people affecting matter, therefore Bob is radioactivity. Bob is Al2SO4. But no, you have to realize that that knowledge of chemistry is an extension of us.
Yes.
An extension of our mind. So I think Bert and Carolyn get too involved, and Chad's going that way, too involved in the chemical physical knowledge. You're forgetting that the human form is the Godhead, and it runs every knowledge system. And every knowledge system is a makeshift bullshit by somebody afraid of dying.
Yeah, what if we find out that what makes up a quark are these little things called Bob?
Yeah, Bob push the electron. Bob the electron. I was being front of the flaps. I didn't want to emphasize me. I didn't want him to find out who I was. And then I was going to win this fucking battle about who the second coming was. It was a rigged game. And he and Steve didn't know I was going to win. So I said Bush Electron rather than Bob the Electron.
Well, when you talk about flaps, it makes me think of the outer ring of the angel diagram with the valence and balance. It's like
what?
The balance.
Oh, they're flaps of the curtain.
Yeah. Yeah,
the valence is a flap. That's right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, everybody's name resonates with the facts, you know. Somebody's name came up recently that really struck us. I can't remember what it was last week. Well, Ian's showing the name thing in Finnegan's Wake. I mean, the leader of the Finnegan's Wake reading group, he always likes the stuff I post, you know, every time. He must be going nuts because he's pretty smart. He knows the Wake, and he's listening to all these other guys who are on his site, men and women, so he knows a lot. And he's actually liking. I didn't think he would. He seemed too straight to me. But what's he going to make of this one? It's unbelievable. Neufeld said the other day, he actually listened to a show last week, 2 weeks ago, for many hours. He said, God, Ion doing fucking Finney's Wake is absolute genius, he says. And Dave, he doesn't know anything about the Wake. So we respect his opinion.
Well, Bob, one thing, too, Ion's talking about, I think the theme this week is the weaving or the knitting.
Yes, back and forth.
Right, but the countering to the weaving is bobbing, right?
Yeah, bob and weaving, that's right.
Yes.
And but I like the way, have you noticed, well, you, Chad, weren't here, but he was saying obsolescent retrieving for a while. You remember that, Bert?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that was what was left over the tetrad, and now he fitted into the weaving thing of a certain kind of crochet that goes back and forth. So, and then it becomes electronic subatomic because it's on, off, on, off, on, off. It's here, then it's there. It's here, then it's there. That's what's happening to our public personalities. They are in jail and then they're not in jail, right? They're becoming subatomic, right, like my chart shows.
Got it.
Yep. Gets more solid every week.
It's brilliant listening to Glyn on the Finnegan's Wake, Bob, the creativity there. And also equally enjoyable is your prose, the way you pronounce every word in there. Now, it's, you've got that real bounce about joy, if you like, about every word you're stringing together there. That's something that I really enjoy about it.
Yeah, I'm surprised how well I read it, because I haven't read it in years.
Mm.
So I'm doing it, but I think it's the drops. I've got a sharper perception or something, so I can do it better than probably could do it 10, 15, 20 years ago. Mm. Yeah, I noticed that I can notice the syllables and say most of them.
Yeah, it's just terrific. It's really, I really, really enjoy the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look at this. I am. Bob has developed splinters in the windmill of his mind. Read it to Bob. So what, is somebody supposed to read something to me?
The chat line?
Yeah. Poor Kyle. He fucking's always messaging or explaining things and no one pays any fucking attention to him. But he's talking about his family came from Switzerland or something.
Bob, I think Ian was talking about obsolescence and retrieval.
Hold it. I think Cassini was Kyle, right? Do we all agree on that?
Yes, I believe he did.
He said, my family left Switzerland in 1780s to come to America for some reason of religious problems. I like the way Ian finally addressed, I can't remember her name. She changed her name to Debbie. She had so many names. I've known her since she was in high school. She was a close friend of Shannon. I can't remember her name now. I don't remember her original name.
So Debbie's not her name. Debbie's not her name, the lady that's pretty strung out mentally.
See, I can't remember whether it was Debbie or not.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be Debbie. I can't remember. But the point is I had addressed her. I like that. He says, look, Debbie, if we're fucking killing babies and everything, we could kill you in 5 minutes, so back off. He soberly sat her down like the principal of the school and said, okay, stop acting up in class. This is what it means. That was funny. I've got to sneak up on Carol and say, what was Shannon's friend's name? And she'll just say it out of instinct and memory, right? She has no thought. It'll just come to her. So that's how I'm going to get the name back. I've talked to her on the phone last year before she went nuts. And I knew her name. I can't call her back. I don't know her name. And I'm not confident. Like she was H. Look, she's HJHKJ right now. HJHKJ. I think. Maybe not. Nah,
got some more information about Epstein in your private session as well.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was working for Bear Stearns and Morgan Stanley. They were in part of that fallout in 2008.
Yes, Bear Stearns he said was. Bear Stearns is in the book. But what Ion said today is he was Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, I heard that also. Yes, Goldman Sachs. Yeah.
Yeah, Ian says Goldman Sachs, and then he says it again, and Sachs is cut off by my editing. So that's what he says it again, but you only hear Golden. But anyways, Goldman Sachs, not Golden, Goldman. That's important. You know, this Matt Taibbi, he famous for you know, Musk gave him the job of releasing the Twitter stuff. Matt Taibbi became famous like 10 years ago, exposing Goldman Sachs as running the White House.
Hmm.
You know, if you're a kid who wants to be a journalist, you probably can't do it right now, but it's always best to go the, quote, honest route, which Matt Taibbi did. You know, he couldn't stand modern journalism. He went on the election buses in 2004 or 2008, and he wrote about how corrupt the fellow journalists were, how sucking up the was just horrible. So he got ostracized. So then Substack came along, so he had Substack as an outlet. And he had been a journalist in the early 90s in Russia, and he and his buddy had a very sexist fucking approach to the staff and the women in Moscow, and they wrote about it and celebrated. So they got in big trouble. That was right at the beginning of Me Too. So he lost his reputation in that period. But then Substack came along, and he started his own thing, and he's the only reasonably honest journalist, or, you know, not caught in the ideology. And so he now has become famous. He's become the guy doing the Elon Musk. See, you always go with the whatever you want to call the straight and narrow, the true path. All those idiots who wouldn't dare do what he was writing and kept a clean nose and worked their stupid shit the last 10 years, they're nobodies. Half of them are fired. So that's the Carolyn principle. You know, be true to your situation. You'll always win out in the long run. It's the way society goes.
In other words, don't be a compliance practitioner.
Yeah. Look, fucking do what should be done. Not worry about what your professors taught you. Or not be stupid and not look at alternative information. So here's a good example. Carol told me the other day, there's this chiropractic people, I don't know, osteopath, and they found out about her, so they set up an interview with her. Before the interview, she watched them interview people, and there was this one doctor that they interviewed, and the person dealt with problems in the joints and all this stuff, specialized in all those areas where magnesium deficiency causes real problems. So Carolyn gets on the show and singles out that interview and that doctor and starts explaining how wrong she was and a whole bunch of shit. And the girl is interviewing, it's a couple, the girl's interviewing her, but the guy is sitting in the back and he's a producer. And he eventually said, no, you can't do this, Carolyn. She's a friend of ours. We're not going to let you talk and you tear her apart. So Carolyn resisted a while, but then they wouldn't let her go on, so she had to give up. So, but it's an example of how this stupid tribalism among certain professionals or among the profession, it's like George Bernard Shaw said, every profession is a conspiracy against the layman. So medicine is really that now. So they felt professional loyalty. And don't hurt this girl because they want status of whatever that girl is, that other doctor's part of. They want to have status there.
Wow.
They don't want to go all the way. They ruined their life with that action.
Wow.
They don't know it yet, but they did. Because they took the wrong choice. They should have gone with Carol and let her say. So she sent him her book. And so they're reading her book now, and I think she said they're sort of learning and finding it interesting. So they interviewed Carolyn too early because they made their stupid choice. Now maybe they can have her back on and correct it once they get brainwashed by her magnesium book.
Hmm.
So what else do you have, Bert or Chad? What issues are you noticing?
Well, you mentioned, again, you just brought up Jameson talking about using the military for some form of communism. And I noticed people on Twitter were sharing images of some ad campaign that the armed forces are doing where they're trying to get people, they're trying to get young people to not go to workplaces after college and come to the military. I guess they always do that, but now they're making it really about, like, don't start at the bottom. Like, if you go to the corporate world, you're going to have to start on the bottom and be a gimp.
Right.
But if you come to the military, you can become a leader. So they're playing to Gen Z and millennials' desire to be somebody, because 75% of them said that they their goal is to either become an influencer or an entrepreneur, because they think they're right. The center of their world, that their celebrities are destined to be. So they're taking advantage of that now in the recruiting to say, like, don't be a loser, come to the military and be a leader. So it's like, they're using a lot more woke stuff in their advertisements. There's one that showed the story of some girl who was a protester, like protesting for gay pride or something like that. And then she went into the military and she had this great life and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they might have heard Benjamin's talk, because that talk was many years ago, 2014. So they saw what he was saying. But see, the problem is that the world's going to blow up further than anybody's purpose. No institution is relevant anymore, including the military. So that's what I'm telling us. It's over. So if you're trying to keep an institution going, like the military, you sort of half improve your thing, but then the other half is compromised, and you go woke. As Carolyn says to her audience, you're on your own. That's the route to ascension. You have to figure out how to live on your own, so to speak. Can't be relying on anything.
So in your private session, you're talking about Goebbels enduring fake their deaths, and Hitler made it out of the bunker and lived a little while.
Yeah,
and then
Goebbels,
you mentioned...
No, hold it.
Yeah.
Goebbels and Goering, they died. Hitler escaped, but he died pretty quickly in Ethiopia. Bormann, who May was always on about escape, he did escape, and he lasted till 1969.
Hmm.
And though Ian thought he May thought he lasted longer. And then Joseph Mengele's, he was caught. He was around in the 80s. He made it out. So that's the background. Go ahead, Jet.
But you're saying Bormann was in South Africa so he could interface with the aliens from Antarctica?
No. A lot of the Germans went down to Antarctica, to Argentina and that. Because they might have been down there before the war, and maybe the aliens took them down there or something, whenever the aliens got located in Antarctica. So there's in the Nazi literature, neo-Nazi literature, they talk about the German camps down in Argentina that are in touch with the aliens. So I checked with that, and Ion said not so much, it seemed. And Bormann was not in touch with the aliens because he was over in South Africa. But I wondered if Bormann had gone to Argentina or Chile to meet with the aliens. But he didn't. He went to Tanzania and was just a rum dealer.
Okay.
Now, I might say in a couple of weeks, bring up Nazis. It's the famous name of their village. It's Colonia Dignidad, like the colony of dignity. Colonia Dignitad, something like that. And bring it up in a month. I'll say, well, did they have a connection to the Nazis, the aliens, and Anna? Of course they did, Bob. That's what they do. They shifted.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, was Peter Drucker an agent of the Prussian Empire? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, because he and Kissinger, Kramer, knew each other in college or something. And they were in Frankfurt. But Drucker came from Vienna. I don't know how he ended up in Frankfurt and meeting Kramer, but he helped Kramer get over there. And then Drucker becomes the top advisor for decades. So yes. If Kramer was from Prussia, I think Drucker was. I didn't ask, is Drucker Prussian? That never got directly asked. I think I might have said Kramer, Drucker, they're from Prussia in passing, and Ian said yes, but we didn't. You have to single out Drucker and get Ian to focus on him and then determine whether he was or not. But it sounds like it, because Austria is the part that disappeared, and they were part of Prussia. Now, notice Prussia was all the way over to Russia. It was a huge territory. So, what is it? There was something about Russia or something that they would do this or that. Then the Bolsheviks, they could have been part of the Prussian Empire, because Prussia was, he said it was Czechoslovakia, Belgium, Denmark, something else, Germany, and Russia, and Latvia. All of that was Prussia.
Hmm.
And they become the actual people from Venice. Oh, yeah, that's my point. So Venice is in Italy. Venice is, in between Russia and Germany and all that. Well, that means Prussia is pretty well the same territory that Venice managed. Venice didn't dominate all these countries, but it was the fulcrum. It was the liaison to the Ottoman Empire. So it had the power. It was like Switzerland in war. It was in the banking. So Venice was the Swiss banking. Well, Prussia could be another name for the Venetian banking, even though it was more focused on whatever. If Prussia was all that territory above Venice, then what was the headquarters of Prussia? It's a forgotten empire.
Were you saying that LaRouche or Beder were focused on the Venetian bankers?
LaRouche.
Webster Tarpley is the LaRouche who developed the thesis of Venice in 1981. Their essay, scholarly magazine called The Campaigner. Kepler did a bunch of long essays on that. And, he became famous for the 911. He's the guy who came up with the phrase false flag. So he's interviewed a lot in the 2000s. He was on Alex Jones' show and that. He would bring in the Venetian oligarchy in his interviews. You'd hear that LaRouchean part of his thinking. He would bring it up at some point, and so the interviewers never knew what he was talking about. That would confuse them, because they didn't know the LaRouche stuff. So the way I analyze what happened today, I slip in a bit of McLuhan, a bit of May, a bit of LaRouche, a bit of Beder, a bit of this, a bit of that. That's the most comprehensive way to look at what's going on, and that's why I'm the best commentator, the most informed.
Multi-lenses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a Finnegan-Ease analysis. It's quadrophenic. But nobody knows the Beder, I know. Nobody knows the May, I know. Nobody knows the LaRouche, I know. Nobody knows the McLuhan. Nobody knows whoever else, Thompson. There's nobody in terms of, we could call it popular opinionated knowledge. I'm not a dentist. I'm not a specialist in some part of biochemistry or something, which is a terrible thing to be. But as a generalist bullshitter, I'm the best in the world. And as a bullshit generalist, you tend to become a politician.
Yeah, but there must be old school politicians, because most of the politicians that I see are just like fucking Muppets.
Yeah, no, that's not, none of that. There aren't any politicians anymore. It's not anybody. It's, no categories here anymore. But back in the day, the generalist encyclopedia kind of person tended to be a politician, because they could be friendly with everybody and talk to everybody.
Yes.
And look like they knew stuff, so the town would send them to Washington. And then they become very corrupt. Because how do you reconcile? You've been deported. You don't know it. You've been sent to Washington, part of the triune tripod, and then you got to deal with those facts. So you become a hypocrite. As Joseph Farrell said in that interview, he said, you cannot be a politician and remain sane. Can't do it. There's too many contradictions, and usually people aren't up to handling all the contradictions, so they become nuts in some way. And then they start fucking 10-year-olds.
Yeah. I appreciate that pattern that he laid out about the how the Kennedy assassination is very important in Washington, and you know which side.
You watched that dialogue?
No. I listened to – I did your part, the short part that you played on Office Hours. No, I couldn't stand – just to hear the description of those guys speaking over it. No. But I listened to what you played.
You're quoting what you heard. You're quoting
Office
what you
Hours.
Heard.
You heard in Office Hours, yeah. But that whole thing about how the Kennedy assassination really lays out where the focus is of whoever's in the White House. And he said that Donald Trump was the only one that was the other side about where they... Because what did he say? The Kennedy assassination was a conspiracy, or there was one shooter, and that lets you know where that person's ideology is as far as when they're in the White House. And I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. But that's right. That's correct. That's very accurate.
A litmus test. Yeah, that's a litmus test. That's why Trump is the greatest politician of the modern era.
Yes.
And he actually tried it. He did everything the liberals wanted to do in the 60s. He withdrew. He tried to withdraw the troops, stop the stupid wars. He did everything else, but he's in Whitney Webb shows Trump's bad side or compromised stuff with Roy Cohn and all that. But you can't be in that level of society because it's all compromised due to aliens running it. So everybody who gets higher up has to deal with those aliens, and then you all get fucked up about it. So you can't be, but in normal terms, you are corrupt to be in that game. But among the corrupt politicians, Trump was the greatest.
Yeah.
Still is, maybe.
Plus in New York City, and Roy Cohn, because didn't Farrell lay out something that Trump Tower wouldn't be without Roy Cohn? Didn't he say that? Did I hear that?
Oh,
correct?
Yeah. Right. No, he couldn't have been anything without that.
Yeah.
And you know when – and I don't know if they got a bit alienated, but at the story's told that when Roy Cohn had his funeral in 86, dying from AIDS, Donald Trump went to the funeral, but he stood in the back. He didn't go and get up front and be visible. He kind of just stood in the back. So he was somehow trying to detach himself, or he knew, I'm not going to get fucking sucked in. It's good he's died. Now I can start to retreat a bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an interesting image that he stood in the back. He went in there low profile. But somebody saw him and reported it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how we know. I don't think Trump tells the story. Someone else tells the story as a historical fact that that's what Trump did during the funeral. But I remember
there's that one documentary on Netflix on Where's My Roy Cohn? Remember that one?
I saw a really good Trump thing, but I don't remember that being the title. I don't know that one. But I wanted to say that some journalist did an article on Roy Cohn in the 80s, and they went to Cohn's house, and it smelled of stink. They really were disgusted by it. It just had a bad smell, a literally bad smell, almost like, a stink shit smell. So it was just the low vibes the guy had to live in. You come here, my shit doesn't even stink, for fuck's sake. I commented on that the other day. I think that was got deleted, but he made a passing about that, passing remark. Oh, yeah, I started smelling bad smells. And I said, what is that stuff? Am I giving off B.O.? Carol to smell me? There's no B.O. coming up. Well, what the fuck am I smelling? So I asked Ion, and he said, and even Carol kind of figured this out, it's angels. He says, they're on to you, Bob. They're close. And sometimes it'll be a nice perfume smell. But these smells you're smelling are the angels.
Wow.
Around you. And then he said, you'll hear this part, I think. The world is rotting. Like, I said, I'm upgrading. It's radioactive ale, too. I'm upgrading. He said, no, you're degrading. The world's degrading.
Yes. I remember hearing that,
And he says, it's rotting. It's rotting away. So in the course of what I was talking about,
I said I've noticed that too when I've been out, and if I get near anyone at the supermarket or something, not always, but a couple times, I just thought, like, it smells like somebody crapped their pants.
Yeah, and it's not the guy you're looking at, it's the fucking invisible alien hanging around you.
Yeah.
I mean angel, not alien. So, so in the course of explaining how I don't stink, it's not me, it's the environment, they said, Bob, your shit doesn't even smell, for fuck's sake. Which is true. You know, 5 years ago, somewhere on Facebook, there was a bunch of us talking, and I suddenly mentioned how my shit doesn't smell. And the Kirkhoff comes on, he says, what the fuck? How do we go from talking about Walter Wrong and literacy to Bob's shit? How the hell that happened?
Speaking of, have you heard from Mr. Kirkhoff at all, Bob? Any peep?
No.
From him?
No, wow. And Ian says he's lurking. He sneaks over. You know, he can't get it out of his mind.
Of course. Of course.
They all are just, they say, what the fuck with this Bob guy? He just doesn't stop. He's not part of our world. We don't know what world he's in, but he just doesn't stop. That's the sharp guy. You realize,
Bob, I think.
Hey, Chet, you realize with that press conference, the alien thing, how many people all over the fucking world are going to go to their spouse, their kid? I know that fucking guy. I know that guy. Because I've met a lot of people in the last 100 years, you know?
Right.
It's going to be the biggest shock in the world for people who knew me or heard of me. And I've walked by a lot of them every fucking day going to the beach. Just think. Every fucking day, I look in the eyes of like 100 people going to the beach and back home.
It's 100 people every day, Bob?
I was thinking of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who said that? Who was thinking of it?
Phil. I was thinking of you. Yesterday, I was just watching one or two clips from a TV series in the UK, which is called Father Ted. I don't know if you've ever watched any of that.
I know Father Ted.
It's very funny. It was an Irish cleric or priest, and he lived in this big house in a place called Craggy Island on the west coast of Ireland, so it's a bit backward in general. And he had a younger priest who was his sort of apprentice living with him, and an old priest who was just basically three parts to the wind and always pissed. But they always were sending up different types of other priests, and it was basically a huge piss take of the Catholic Church. But there was one episode there where Father Ted had performed a great miracle, and so they decided to award him the golden cleric statue, and they set this whole occasion up for him. And, it was something that never happened to him before, so it was a great opportunity, as he saw it, to set the record straight with a few of the people he'd met in the past. And so finally, when he's up on the stage in front of the microphone with his statue in his hand and the microphone, and he's got this audience of you know, sort of religious dignitaries in front of him, he starts going one through one by one the people who have dissed him in the past or upset him or he's had an argument with. And it's bloody hilarious. By the time he sort of gets about four or five into it, there's not one person left in the audience. They've all been left.
Well, remember, I said that last week. Phil, you probably remember, I said that last week. That's what I was going to do at the press conference. I'm going to name every fucking grievance I had about everybody and single them off one by one.
Yeah. I thought that is Bob the whole way through. Oh, so funny.
Yeah, yeah. So you had heard me, and they did it on the show.
Yeah, I'd heard you say that more than a couple of times, and I'd forgotten about this Father Ted one, and then I saw it, and I thought, oh, God, that's what it's going to be like.
Yeah. But, Chad, you were going to say something 5 minutes ago.
About the latest Cameron and Bob recording, you sent that out by email. I only listened to like 30 minutes of it because I got it late.
Yeah, I did also.
Did you listen to it all, Bert, or just 30 minutes?
Just 30 minutes because I was right before I was going to sleep, prepared for the show, and went to bed.
It's so fucking good that Carolyn said, now here's Carolyn. I forced her to listen to it. And she listened to it. She, at the end, she said, well, halfway through, she said, this is fucking tremendous. This has to be sent out everywhere. Everybody's got to hear this. It is incredible what we say. And you guys may not have heard enough of it to get the whole fucking amazing thing we say.
No, but I can tell you're laying something. It's clear you're laying something out there with the importance of Finnegan's Wake and Cluin talking about the
pre-tribal
it's pre-tribal man. Yeah, he says the private individual goes way back before tribal. Yeah. What's that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I've made that quote from a talk he gave in 1970. It's reported in Rolling Stone. So it's in my article, and I brought it up occasionally with Cameron. So we talked about it once, twice before, but it came up again 2 weeks ago, and he went and found these other quotes that I didn't know about. So we got about six quotes about the pre-tribal condition. And nobody talks about the pre-tribal condition. They all say, McLuhan began with the tribal oral man and then into the visual and then the electric oral. So that cliche we destroy. And, but it's helped by him finding these other quotes. So we lay out these six or so quotes. They're tremendous. He found another one he sent me the next day. But meanwhile, Steve had sent me this concert by MC5 in 1972, and he says, Wayne Kramer, fucking unbelievable guitarist, obviously the best punk guitarist ever. And so I watched it, and he's right, holy shit, that fucking Wayne Kramer do incredible playing. So I went onto the Schmucks page, Fake Explorations, and they might think I'm an old fucking, me and Cameron just old guys. So I said, look, what we do is equal to Wayne Kramer's blistering lead guitar. And so who puts together punk music, the best punk music, with the McLuhan analysis? That's a tremendous new kind of academia pattern I laid out there.
Also, that was by the way,
promo for the link. And this one guy who's a fan of me from way back, Gary Johnson, he shows up once a year liking something, but he's some hip fucking guy. And from CKLN days, he posted it. He said, everybody, listen to this. The world's ultimate McLuhan archivist, Bob Dawes with Cameron McEwen, and they dissect McLuhan's Catholicism. I mean, that's the whole mystery. What the fuck? Why was he a Catholic and all that? So what were we going to say, Bert?
Two things. The first thing is the thing that I got right before I, you know, turned it off is, like, we're right at the point where we have to become pre-tribal. Because everybody's tribal right now. Everyone.
No, everybody is pre-tribal in the digital isolation. We're all our own little matrix tube.
Yes, but technically when you're in the chemical body, it's tribal.
Oh, yeah. It's the TV body is tribal.
Yeah. But the second thing, didn't you hear Ion say that it appears that Ion has ALP in their sights? Did you hear that? Put him on the prayer
list. Yeah. Back to what you said, Bert. You didn't get we are digital and been private.
Yes, I got that part. I got that part. But I was thinking that, like, for me, I've noticed that part of being in the bubble that we're pre-tribal. But when you're in chemical body, which I don't do it much, but when I am, I notice the tribalism instantly. You see the tribalism right now with the World Cup.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but see, that's a minor tribalism. There's the astral tribalism, and then there's the TV tribalism. Mm-hmm. You know, the astral body, the chemical body, the TV body, and then the chip body. The chip body is pre-tribal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people want to be. They don't want to, these millennials, they don't want to be a tribal person. They want to be an influencer. Someone from the pulpit by themselves fucking with a cult underneath them. Ion, I noticed last week or something, he made a little, he went after ALP. He made a comment. Yeah. And so I said to him the other day, what's that about? He says, no, it's time. He's done. We're coming after him.
Good.
Yeah. And the next day or today, I had posted the camera thing last night. There's ALP saying, just two old farts talking bullshit. That's how he responded.
Does he know that he's going to get old and you should be the pinnacle of what he wants to be when he gets old, that you're 100 years old?
Ion says he knows that he's going to have to repent. He somehow knows, and he's scared as shit. He's all fucked up. And
good.
He's got a lot of problems going on with his computers.
Which guy is that again, Bob?
This is Jim Patterson, who's known as Anna Olivia Florbell.
Oh, yeah. He really did not like me when I took over the website from him. Remember that?
Mm. Oh, did you have a problem with him?
No, but he had a problem with me, and he ended up, it was because he thought I was too much of an asshole American or something like that.
Well, okay, I forgot about that. So you talked to him. You knew Jim.
I had to talk to him to take over the hosting of one of your websites for you back in 2016.
Right. He did How Ionic, and he also did Carol. I don't know what Carolyn had before you, but he did do stuff for Carolyn for years, and he did our How Ionic. He even had a conversation. He, in 2009, June 2009, when we got the sun image for How Ionic, we got Jim on the line with JW. He actually talked to JW. Didn't see him, but he talked to him, and we worked out the image. So he continued putting the shows into How Ionic for years, and he did Carolyn. So you had to talk to him. What is the issue you're aware of that he didn't like you about?
He was just he would never reply to my emails. He would get mad when I would I'd ask questions, like, okay, what's the password for this, and what's this, and what's that? And he got mad. He wouldn't reply, and then Carolyn told me it's because he thinks your attitude, you're like an asshole American or something. I'm like, how the hell can he know that? I talked to him on the phone once, and all I was doing was talking to him by email. I don't know what he was expecting. Maybe a hand job or something.
So, well, what, when he started, you know, he was a good friend for years. And I helped him with a lot of McLuhan stuff, and a lot of the documents he's putting out, he got from me. When we got well locked into Ion, he got mad and he started posting. He said, Bob was great, but he's ruined his career by working with Ion. And then a couple of years ago, he started posting these cartoons of me. So I asked Ion, what's up with Jim? And he says, Jim feels abandoned. You know, you were good friends, and he doesn't understand the Ion thing. He doesn't know why you're doing that, and he thinks that you've left him behind. So that was his first problem, and then it just got worse finally a year or two ago I said screw this, so I exposed who he was, and that really made him go ballistic. He probably thought I betrayed our friendship, but he wasn't being a good friend.
You did it on Facebook. Didn't you do that on Facebook?
Yeah, I did on Facebook.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
Because
yeah.
Alex Kuskas asked me, who's ALP? And I said, I don't know. So I just lied to him and said, I didn't know. But then Alex was on Fake Exploration, but then he left it. So when finally I decided to do something about Jim, I said, well, Alex isn't here.